Welcome to Tori Mecha Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Rachel Besser, and today we'll be studying Yirmiyahu Perkaf Aleph, Chapter 21. Perkaf Aleph happens late in Yirmiyahu's career, very close to the Chorban, during the end of the reign of Tzidkiyahu. Remember, the Prakim of Yirmiyahu are really not in order, so this Perek happens much later than the Perek before. In order to understand the events of this parak, we really have to get a sense of the history all the way back from the time of Jehoiakim, the wicked son of the righteous king Yoshiahu. After Jehoiakim is occupied by Babylonia in 605, he remains a vassal for 3 years, and then, seeing a potential weakness in his oppressor, attempts to throw off Babylonia's yoke and rebels against Nebuchadnezzar in the year 602 BCE, against Yirmiyahu's advice. Jehoiakim is captured after 4 years of rebellion in 598 and dragged in chains to Babylonia, where he dies, tortured and alone. His son, Jehoiachin, takes over briefly, just for 3 months, until he too is captured and taken to a Babylonian prison. This time, Nebuchadnezzar has had enough of the rebellious Judean kings and anoints Yoshio's third son, Matanya, who he renames Tzidkiyahu. This third son of Yoshio is very different from his brothers, Jehoiakim and Jehoahaz, in that he's a weak person. He doesn't make strong decisions. He's not the type to rebel. Perhaps this is the reason that Nebuchadnezzar chose him. He rules for a total of 11 years until the destruction of Yerushalayim and the Beit HaMikdash. Tzidkiyahu is a vassal king to Babylonia for most of the 11 years, a little bit less than 9 of them, until he too rebels against Babylonia at the end of his reign. This parak takes place during Tzidkiyahu's rebellion, when the Judea is at war with Babylonia. Conditions were terrible. The Judean army was weak, completely outmatched, and Babylonia was bearing down on Malchut Yudah, and they were floundering for food, supplies, and soldiers. This parak, Perkaf Aleph, Chapter 21, opens with Tzidkiyahu sending two officers, Pashhur ben Malkiah and Svanya ben Maaseiah. This is, by the way, a different Pashhur than the one who tortured Yirmiyahu in the previous parak, to ask Yirmiyahu to daven on their behalf to Hashem. They say in Pasuk Bet, verse 2, Drash na ba'adenu at Hashem. Please ask on our behalf. Plead with Hashem on our behalf. Ki Nebuchadnezzar melch Babel milcham aleinu. Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylonia, is fighting us. Ulai yaaseh Hashem otanu kechol neflotav v'ya'aleh mi'aleinu. Maybe Hashem will do a miracle for us, do something wondrous, and he, Nebuchadnezzar, will leave us. This seems like wonderful news. Although it's late in Tzidkiyahu's reign, better late than never, finally the people are turning to Hashem for help. Finally, they're realizing that Yirmiyahu is not a false prophet, not a Navi Sheker. They've rejected their old ways. They're ready to start again, turn over a new leaf. But before we get too excited, let's just learn a little bit more about the background. Yirmiyahu had been telling both Jehoiakim and Tzidkiyahu not to fight the Babylonians all the way from the time when Babylonia invaded Jehoiakim in the fourth year of Jehoiakim's reign in 605. We'll explore this theme more in depth in Parak 25. But Yirmiyahu had been telling the Jews over and over to submit to Babylonia and not to fight against them. This was a very key point in Yirmiyahu's prophecy. Submitting would be a sign that B'nai Israel recognize that the Babylonian occupation is not just a random geopolitical event, but rather it is a religious one. If they would submit, what it would mean is that they are recognizing, as Yirmiyahu is telling them, that it's their sins that brought Hashem to punish them through the means of Babylonia. Not just because Babylonia happened to want to enlarge their fledgling empire and capture the world, but no, they would recognize that this is a punishment from Hashem in response to what they had been doing and because they kept ignoring their Nevi'im and ignoring Hashem telling them to stop or they would get punished. By rebelling against the Babylonian occupation, as Jehoiakim and Tzidkiyahu both did, what they are announcing is that Hashem has nothing to do with this, that we're dealing only with the world of politics and foreign affairs. They are rejecting Yirmiyahu's viewpoint and his direct instructions in his prophecy, and thereby they are also rejecting God. It is the ultimate chutzpah to then come and ask Yirmiyahu to daven for them that Hashem will help them in the war that Yirmiyahu told them not to fight. Yirmiyahu already gave them a game plan of how to succeed, how to win in this war, and that is surrender to Babylonia. Accept them as their masters and recognize that it is B'nai Israel's sins that caused Babylonia to come to begin with. With this background, it is no surprise that Yirmiyahu does not react joyously to this request for prayers. How frustrating it must be to finally be turned to, but in a way that completely invalidates all of his prophecies and shows a certain tone deafness to the people's own culpability and their corrupt society. And Yirmiyahu's response, therefore, is justly harsh. Starting in Pasuk Dalet, verse 4, Yirmiyahu says, Ko amar Hashem Elokei Yisrael. So says Hashem in response to your request, Hinani may save et klei ha-melchama asher b'yedchem, asher atem nilchamim bam, et melch bavel ve'et ha-kazdim ha-tzarim aleichem mechutz l'choma, v'asabti otam el toch ha'ir hazot. What am I going to do? I'm going to take the weapons that you have pointed out of the city, the weapons that you're fighting with, that you're fighting Nebuchadnezzar, the Babylonians, the Chaldeans, the ones that are hurting you outside the wall, and I'm going to turn them around. I'm going to point them towards you, and I'm going to bring all those weapons into your city. V'nelchamti ani itchem. I will fight against you biyad netuya ubizroa chazaka, with an outstretched hand and a harsh arm. Uba'af ubechema ubeketzef gadol, and with very great anger against you. Now, the offensive nature of the request is one thing, but it shows that there's no tshuva being done, no self-reflection, no way forward fixing the original problem that led B'nai Israel to the state of being that they are in only 2 or 3 years before the Chorban. And therefore, says Yirmiyahu, because you are not doing anything to help yourself, the weapons that you're pointing out of the city, I am going to point them against you. Don't you realize that the weapons in the Babylonians' hands are there because Hashem put them there? And now these weapons are going to be turned against you, and I will be the one fighting against you, said God. Sure, it will be the Babylonians, the Chaldeans that are actually holding the weapons, but it's me, says Hashem, who's the one directing their hands. Note that the language that Yirmiyahu uses to describe Hashem's fury with B'nai Israel, as he says, V'nalchamti ani itchem, I will fight against you, biyad netuya, with an outstretched hand, ubizroa chazaka, and with a strong arm. This is very specific imagery taken from Yetziat Mitzrayim, from the Exodus from Egypt, where a constant refrain was heard that Hashem took them out, bizroa netuya, with an outstretched arm. In that case, it was an outstretched arm to help B'nai Israel. And here, it's an outstretched arm to hurt them. The language that Yirmiyahu uses is purposeful. It is supposed to be shocking and make an impact on the people. It is supposed to convey to the people just how far they've strayed from their roots. By their seeming act of prayer and trust in Hashem, they have gone so far from what actual trust in Hashem looks like and from actually serving Him the way they did in the desert when they merited to be saved with Hashem's outstretched hand. Now Hashem's hand is outstretched against them to hurt them. If this war is continued, it will end in bloodshed. Everyone who fights will be killed or taken captive, and the poor people of the city, what we call the collateral damage, they will be hurt as well. The civilians will be ravaged, their lives turned upside down as their beloved city will first be sieged and then decimated. It almost seems unfair that all the power to end this war lies in the hands of one weak and tortured soul, Tzidkiyahu, who can't ever bring himself to make good and strong decisions. Yirmiyahu, therefore, after he gives this message to Tzidkiyahu, he turns and he speaks directly to the people, and he puts the choice in their hands. I'm reading from verse 6. Ve'el ha'am hazeh tomar, say to this people, Ko amar Hashem, hinani noten lifnechem et derech ha'chayim, ve'derech ha'mavet. I am putting in your hands the path of life and the path of death. Basically, you now have a choice. You have the choice, not Tzidkiyahu calling the shots, but each and every single individual in Yerushalayim has a choice. Verse 9, Hayoshev ba'ir hazot, Yamu b'cheref ubara'av ubedaver. Anyone who stays and casts their lot with Tzidkiyahu and stays in the city is going to die, whether it be by sword, or by famine, or by pestilence, by disease. But v'hayotze v'nafal ala kazdim hatzarim aleichem, if anyone decides to give themselves over to the Chaldeans, the ones that are hurting you, haytalo nafsho l'shalal, that person will live. His soul will be the spoils of war. Yes, you won't be captors. You won't get a lot of spoils of war, but you'll be alive. Ki samti panai be'ir hazot l'ra'ah, says Yirmiyahu. Bad things are going to happen to this city. Lo l'tova, Ne'um Hashem. It's not going to be good. Biad melch bavel tinatin. This city is going to fall to the king of Bavel, usrefa le'esh, and the city will be burnt. Usually, it's the king and the officers who make the political decisions, and the people just have to follow along. Here, though, the stakes are too high. Whoever is in the city will be destroyed, along with the Beit HaMikdash and the rest of the city. Yirmiyahu, therefore, presents the choice to each person alone. The city will be completely destroyed, and the choice whether to surrender the city as a whole lies with Tzidkiyahu. Of course, Yirmiyahu wants him to do that. That's his advice. But each person can make the choice for themselves as well and give themselves over to the Babylonians who are outside the walls of the city. It won't be an easy or comfortable life, but at least they will be alive, as opposed to everyone else in the city, who will either be killed or taken captive under much harsher conditions. Just want to explain for 1 second why it keeps going back between Bavel and Kazdim, Babylonia and the Chaldeans. So this empire is actually, it's called the Babylonian Empire, but it's actually called the Neo-Babylonian Empire, the New Babylonian Empire. The people who lived there, their names were the Kazdim, the Chaldeans, but they renamed themselves Babylonia in order to seem like they had this very long history. They took a name from much earlier, which you might remember from Migdal Babel, the Tower of Babel, and they said that they are the descendants of these Babylonians, because in the ancient Near East, the longer you could claim to have been around, the more you could claim that the world was created for you. So therefore, if you can kind of latch yourself onto an earlier heritage, then you could have a larger claim that you can have kind of this birth story of your nation. So the Kazdim name themselves Bavel, and therefore they're both called Bavel, and they're also called the Kazdim, Babylonia and the Chaldeans. And Yirmiyahu will go back and forth in terms of how he refers to them. Yirmiyahu urges Bnei Israel at the end of the parak to dig deep to the roots of their sin and their corrupt society. Instead of expending energy asking the Navi to daven on your behalf to do something that the Navi told you explicitly not to do, he tells them instead to look inward and realize that you do have a way out of this war. There is a way to get Nebuchadnezzar to leave the walls of Jerusalem, but it's not by davening for a miracle. It's by doing actions to fix yourselves. And therefore, Yirmiyahu says to the people at the end of the parak in Pasukin Aleph, Beit David, verse 11, Beit David, House of David, Ko Amar Hashem, Dino Laboker Mishpat, Vatsilu Gazul Miyad Osek. Remember, every single morning you need to judge just verdicts. Morning by morning, you need to find people who are robbed and rescue them from the people who robbed them. You need to basically fix your society, which is completely corrupt. Your justice system is corrupt. The way you treat people is corrupt. And if so, pen teitse ka'esh chamati uba'ara ve'ein mechabeh mipnei ro'am alelehem, lest my fire come out, the fire of my anger come out and burn down the city, and no one will be able to put it out because of your wicked acts. Says Yirmiyahu to the people, forget praying for a miracle. Look inside. Look at your society. Look at yourself. Don't daven to Hashem to help you when you don't help yourselves. And the way to help yourselves is to end this war. Take responsibility for your actions. Recognize your corruptions. That's the way you can save yourselves. And that's what Hashem truly wants of you. So just to summarize, the parak starts off with Tzidkiyahu asking Yirmiyahu to pray for him. Instead of a positive answer, Yirmiyahu lashes out against Tzidkiyahu and his officers and the people for asking him such a question that shows that they have not introspected at all. He then tells them the city is going to be destroyed, but he gives a choice to each person in the city on their own that they themselves can surrender if they want to save their lives. And at the end, he ends it off by telling the people, look at yourselves, check your ways, return. Even at this late stage, you can return to having a just society. And if you do that, then the city really can be saved. Thank you for studying together. Le'iloi Nishmat Malka Esther, Bat Tzvi Yosef.